Hi, it's Diane. On my mind...
Well, we're trying to find out about a whistleblower. We have
what
a whistleblower.
Does it mean to be a whistleblower? Whistleblowing has a long, unique history in the U.S., and as the author of a new book says, it's crucial to our democracy. As President Trump seeks to discredit the individual who's put the impeachment proceedings into motion, I talk with Alison Stanger about this moment in history and the rules surrounding whistleblowing. She's professor of political science at Middlebury College. Her new book is titled Whistleblowers, Honesty in America, From Washington to Trump. I spoke with Professor Stanger by phone. Alison Stanger, your new book couldn't be more relevant to today's news. When did you actually begin writing it, and why?
I began writing it about 7 years ago. I had written a previous book called One Nation Under Contract, The Outsourcing of American Power and the Future of Foreign Policy. And that book looked at the privatization of American foreign policy and the use of contractors in almost every aspect of national security. And I realized that business and government were collaborating quite closely, and it struck me that we were putting an awful lot of faith in our elites to do right by the country rather than just to do right by their own economic interests. And so I thought, how do we keep our elites honest? This seems like a really important question, and that's what led me to whistleblowers.
Explain to us when and how the U.S. developed its whistleblower protections.
Whistleblowing is really as American as apple pie. It's present from 1778, before the ratification of the U.S. Constitution. We passed our first whistleblower protection law in that year, and we did so in response to a man named Essex Hopkins, who abused his public office for private gain. He was the first Commodore or Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Navy, and he defied George Washington on multiple occasions. He wouldn't take the U.S. ships to engage the British where General Washington wanted him to engage them. He instead took the U.S. Navy to other destinations that served his economic interests, which were, as a Rhode Islander, intimately tied up with the slave trade. So this is something that goes way back in our history, and it's the reason why you see both Democrats and Republicans in the Senate unanimously agreeing that the whistleblower complaint should go forward.
And it's so interesting because you say in your book that it's a miracle that the report that finally spurred House Majority Leader Nancy Pelosi to launch an impeachment inquiry ever reached the light of day. Explain why.
The reason, and my book shows this amply, is because intelligence community whistleblowers are rare occurrences. It doesn't happen very often. The intelligence community has a real culture of secrecy. So the very idea of whistleblowing seems to be at odds with the institution's agenda, where they want to keep secrets in order to keep us safe. So one man's national security whistleblower is another man's insider threat in the intelligence community. So this is a very fragile system to harvest these complaints. And what's more typical is for them to die on the vine or to be suppressed. If you look at Edward Snowden, for example, he was strongly encouraged to report through the Inspector General system. He chose to leave the country to reveal his secrets. And he was probably wise to do so because the Inspector General of the NSA at the time of the Snowden leaks, a man by the name of George Allard, was actually removed from his post in 2016 for retaliating against a whistleblower. So this is not something that the intelligence community does routinely. It goes against their standard operating procedures. But I think we're seeing it because of the grave threat that the current situation poses to national security.
And this particular complaint apparently just stuck right to the rules all the way through. Is that correct?
Yes, and you have Acting Director of National Intelligence James McGuire saying that it followed the rules and was justified. That's extraordinary, too, because both the Acting Director of National Intelligence James McGuire and the Intelligence Community Inspector General Michael Atkinson are Trump appointees. And we all know where the president stands on this whistleblower and his or her intentions. So it's a miracle that this complaint has come to light. And we should be grateful to this whistleblower for taking great risks for American democracy and the rule of law.
And yet now the Congress wants to speak with this whistleblower. The question becomes, how do you protect his or her identity? I recall Valerie Plame coming forward, and she was outed.
This is a real concern. Hopefully, the whistleblower can testify behind closed doors, but there will probably be a great clamoring on the part of the American public to see the whistleblower. Maybe not, because this whistleblower is at great risk. We've all seen what the president has said about this whistleblower. He's called him a partisan and someone advancing partisan interests within the intelligence community. He's called on people to retaliate against the whistleblower. So this whistleblower is in danger, and we have to take steps to be sure that they're protected. How do we do that? Well, Congress can provide some measure of security in the way they handle it, but I think it's incumbent on the American people to insist that whistleblowing is American, and whistleblower retaliation in this instance would be completely at odds with our ideals. And if there's that public pressure, I think you'll see politicians respond to it and make sure the whistleblower is kept safe.
We'll be back with more from Professor Alison Stanger after a short break.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Now, here's the rest of my conversation with Alison Stanger. Her new book is titled Whistleblowers, Honesty in America, From Washington to Trump. Here's what I don't understand, Professor Stanger. The president has said he deserves to confront not only the whistleblower who, because he did not have firsthand knowledge of the telephone call with Mr. Zelensky, but also the person who illegally gave this information, which the president calls largely incorrect. So that makes me wonder whether the president really understands the law behind the whistleblower law.
Yeah, it's very clear he doesn't understand what whistleblowing is in the American context. You're absolutely right, Diane. He has an understanding of whistleblowing that is more appropriate in an authoritarian context. It's really interesting because they start out telling you that whistleblowing is in America's DNA and we celebrate whistleblowers in the United States, although sometimes as our attention wanders, they wind up suffering greatly. But he has an understanding of whistleblowing that's more appropriate for an authoritarian leader. Americans celebrate whistleblowing, but if you look at other countries and the word for whistleblower in foreign languages, take, for example, post-communist Europe, the word has negative connotations. It means a snitch. It means an informer. So whistleblowing as a concept really only makes sense in a thriving and flourishing democracy. And it's fascinating to me that the president is instead insisting on this quite authoritarian, un-American understanding of whistleblowing and the rule of law.
He's actually termed the whistleblower as a traitor or a spy, and he says, remember what we used to do with traitors and spies, implying that this person should actually be put to death.
He seems to be throwing stuff up against the wall and seeing what sticks. None of it really makes coherent sense. But I think it's important to realize that we all just need to stay laser focused on the substance of the complaint, which indicates a cover-up of both a national security threat, which is the shadow foreign policy that he and Giuliani, it looks like Attorney General Barr and perhaps even Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, were executing in direct contradiction to the stated policy of the United States as implemented and pursued by the State Department, and also for which Congress has appropriated funds for military aid to Ukraine. So there's this shadow foreign policy issue that's a national security threat, but there's also a threat to democracy from within when you see the president actively encouraging foreigners to intervene in our electoral process. This is truly unprecedented because I think it's pretty obvious that Americans should elect public officials, not foreigners. So the content of the complaint is what people should stay focused on.
You mentioned Secretary of State Pompeo. We now learn he was actually on the call with Mr. Zelensky, and he denied that he was on the call. So we as Americans do not quite know whether our officials, elected or appointed, are telling their own truth or the real truth. We don't have the facts.
And we really need to insist on a distinction between truth and falsehood, because you can't have a democracy if you don't insist upon that distinction. The leader or the president does not get to define what truth is. The American people get to decide through deliberation what the truth is. And the thing to stay focused on, again, because there's so much noise surrounding this, is why are officials lying? In whistleblowers, I show throughout American history that whistleblowers expose secrets that elites want to keep hidden, and for good reason. Whistleblowers often expose corruption, which is the pursuit of private interest when you're a public official. So when elites lie, that's often a red flag that you're on to some kind of wrongdoing, and we're going to see more in the days ahead.
You described what Stephen Miller, the senior advisor to President Trump, said on Fox News last Sunday as Orwellian spin.
On what basis do you say that this was a partisan hit job?
First of all, if you read the 7-page little Nancy Drew novel that the whistleblower put together, it drips with condescension, righteous indignation, and contempt for the president. It's also ludicrous on its face.
It is rather Orwellian, because the thing I'm struck by is that the president and his various associates don't seem to have an understanding of how the rule of law is supposed to operate, how impartial justice is supposed to operate, even what public service is. The president seems to think that his associates, the attorney general, national security advisor, and everyone have sworn allegiance to the president, but they've actually sworn an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And what's interesting to me as a student of politics in other countries is that this is very similar to the sort of understanding you saw in Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, where the intelligence community there swore an oath of allegiance to the supreme leader, not to the Constitution. So this is very un-American.
The president has also said he believes that there was political bias involved. Have you read the whistleblower complaint in its entirety?
Yes, absolutely, I have. And what's striking about it is how lucid it is and how well written it is. And that's why it's really struck a chord. But whistleblowing is not a partisan issue. It's really an American issue. And people who argue that the whistleblower is partisan aren't understanding what a whistleblower is as defined by American law. They have an obligation to report wrongdoing when they see it.
Now, one of the lawyers, Andrew Bakaj, representing the whistleblower, sent a letter to the Congress expressing fears for his client's safety and citing remarks that the president himself has made, which we've already referred to, what is to prevent someone in civilian life from taking action against this person?
It's very worrisome because there are diehard Trump supporters who, when given these kind of dog whistles, can follow through and ruin the lives of people who disagree with the president. We don't do that in American politics. That sounds more like a mafia operation. You know, it's hardly unusual for American presidents to want to punish leakers. We can recall Edward Snowden was the seventh person the Obama administration charged with violating the Espionage Act. And previously, only nine individuals were prosecuted over the entire act's existence. But Donald Trump is really the first president to celebrate foreign electoral interference while actively seeking to intimidate and shut down the web institutions designed to keep government accountable to the people. I think he's also the first to encourage his supporters to retaliate against a whistleblower.
One last question. Can you define for us the difference between civil disobedience and whistleblowers?
That's a great question, because in my book, I argue that whistleblowing is a cousin of civil disobedience, but they're really slightly different. Whistleblowers are insiders who expose misconduct. Civil obedience, on the other hand, breaks the law in order to show that the law is unjust. So Rosa Parks moves to the front of the bus, breaks the law, and in so doing, shows that the law is ridiculous. That's not the case with whistleblowers. In the intelligence community, they're breaking the law, to be sure, because they're releasing classified information. But at the same time, they're not indicating a law that's unjust. They're doing it for the higher cause of upholding the rule of law in American democracy.
Alison Stanger, I want to thank you so much for joining us and helping us understand both the risks ahead as well as the importance of learning everything that this whistleblower has to say, how important all of that is to our democratic way of life.
It's an honor and privilege to speak with you, Diane. Thanks for having me.
That's all for today. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Cliff Gallagher and Natalie Yurev-Lipker. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.